Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What is up, IL Prep Nation? I am Terry Foy. He is Dan Kaplan, and it has been far too long since we have said those words. I just finished a run, shower didn't take. I'm dripping with sweat. I've got the sunglasses, tan line. That is how you know it is the summer recruiting circuit. That being said, it's not exclusively that. We're going to finish this conversation by talking a little bit about the final Q Collar National High School rankings, which are forthcoming. We have a national champion that is ready to be declared. But first, Dan, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. You mentioned your sunglass, Dan. I have a little bit of sunburn, which is great because I feel like up until now, it was the most mild June that we could have possibly asked for the recruiting trail of all time. So it was due.
It is so hard to do this podcast because we are both on the road a lot during the summer. And so really appreciative of your time. You just finished up 2 days at Maverick Showtime, and that's where this conversation is going to begin. But we're also going to talk about an editorial that I've got coming out on Friday, the day this podcast drops, about the number one recruit in this class and how unique it is relative to the last decade. From there, we'll talk about the weekend that I had last weekend, where I split days between the primetime high school summer invitational and grade eight, and then the week prior where you were at best in class. A lot to discuss, and we might as well dive right in. Maverick Showtime, we recorded a podcast after your 2 days there last year, and it proved to be both very fruitful and very predictive. From a just top-line standpoint, how would you characterize your 2 days in Tinton Falls, New Jersey?
Yeah, I mean, from a talent perspective, it's like it's unbelievable. Like, obviously, just getting into that event is like a certain baseline of like this player is going to be good. And so then it becomes like, you know, a pecking order within them. And then like you're answering a bunch of questions, you know, it's like, oh, I've heard this name. I know this guy is good. But like, what exactly does this game entail? How does it like fit within against his peers and all those types of things? And so it's almost like, and especially coming off of the spring where like you see so many of these guys doing individual things for their high school teams, but against 25s, 26s, and in certain cases, 28s. And so then to get all of just the best 27s on one field and one platform, and it just becomes this like ultimate breeding down to be able to create a bunch of, you know, informed opinions on these guys.
So what did you see?
Let's go through some notes. Yeah, that's an open-ended question, but I think the first place to start, and I feel like this will be a trend obviously throughout just, you know, this podcast, but every coaching staff, when they go and meet back up, like the largest spot, like the hardest spot to figure out is going to be goalie, right? Like there's just so many of them. And maybe that actually makes it easier, is like, you can't miss because there's so many good ones. But in this situation, I thought that, you know, you just had a ton of really good ones on site. And I think the first one to start with is Mo Sobel, who is truly just an athletic freak, like a real unicorn for, you know, a combination of his size, but just how well he moves. And he made a save getting pipe to pipe in like a full split sprawl where he's then throwing that punch across his body as well. And there's an awesome freeze frame picture of the moment as he's going and getting pipe to pipe. And he's just taking up the entire cage. And so from that perspective, for him to be able to like keep his shoulders square, and he does a lot of like the Blaze Reardon is what I'd call it, where like your body is dropping, but your shoulder and your head stays up and you're square to the shooter. So you can take up a ton of it. And so like he's on one knee, or he's, you know, his body is dropping, but he's making a save high. And it's just a product of how big and athletic and well he moves all at the same time.
I think it's right to evoke Blaze Reardon's name because he's a heavy influence on Mo. The Springside Chestnut Hill Academy attendee plays for both him and Brian Dougherty, who is definitely among the best big goalies in the history of the sport. Also switched to play with Primetime this summer. And was it him that you described as moving like water?
Yes. Yeah. He's giant, but moves like water. And that, I think, is you know, and I'll quote Matt Gill. I hope that's okay with him, but just unicorn status of how well he moves at that size.
Long been rumored or linked to the University of Maryland, but certainly we would expect the folks in Happy Valley to try to have a say in that and keep the hometown boy or the in-state boy at home. Keep going, because you're right. This is a deep goalie class. Who else stood out?
Yep. So I would say the other one that kind of just like, you know, we know Mo is great. Teddy O will come up a couple of times in this conversation. He was great goalie for Taft that was also really good at best in class, where there was another really good goalie unit as well. And then Jack Kroll is a guy that I didn't know a ton about going into this that made the All-Star game and is fantastic. And one of the things that I think is really interesting in these individual showcases is the goalies that are able to get their group organized and communicate, not just like, you know, blubber filler words, but like be really direct and really clear and like, you know, not just like screaming out who's hot, but telling guys that they are, those types of things. And I thought he did a really good job of that on top of like actually saving the ball really well. A little bit smaller, quicker, especially compared to the previous guys that we were talking about. And Mo with just like a very much and Teddy who takes up a ton of the cage as well. But Jack a little bit smaller, quicker, and more of the like, you know, that kind of prototype goal as in cage.
We're going to have an opportunity to talk about a couple of the other goalies that really stood out as this podcast continues, because I got to see them in their club team settings. Let's switch to the other end of the field and talk about the elite offensive players, the guys that were trying to score on them, because I think that sets up the point that I want to make really well, and then we can come back to who impressed you out of the midfielders or the defenders or the faceoff guys at Showtime.
Yeah, so I think again, obviously a good segue into the next topic at some point will be, you know, the guys that have a case for number one, and among them there are several attackmen that we got firsthand looks at, and I put Riley Woods in that category as well. He played attack at Showtime. I know he played a ton of midfield for Culver through the spring and was really impactful for them as a midfielder, which I think just, you know, is showing off a little bit of the versatility to his game. But James Hullborough and JT Cross, as well as George Calderoni, Trip King, are kind of like ball carrying, initiating, below GLE, can go at you and attack quarterback types that we got really good looks at throughout the course of that. And all of them can really carry the load offensively. And then I would also say that the youngest Colsey is another guy that really showed a flair for the creative, super dynamic, and an awesome shooter as well. And so he was a guy that, like, every time either him or Holbro, who played on the same line, touched the ball, there was something awesome happening. And so, and one thing I'll quickly add is, like, it's hard to reduce this Showtime segment into just like, we could probably do an entire podcast just on Showtime and still have guys that, like, you know, popped at some point. But just kind of hammering the very tip of the spear, those are the guys that, you know, I really felt kind of moved the needle in a big way. And then one guy that I'll quickly add to that that maybe didn't have quite the same name recognition, but is equally awesome and can also really quarterback an offense is Nick Lagunowich out of Chatham and plays for BBL. Another guy that I would throw right in that category of that skill set and type that, you know, somebody come 9-1 will be, you know, hammering the door down for.
Yeah, so this was something that I thought a lot about last year, and I wrote about it. You and I wrote about it with respect to who was the number one player after watching Dylan Faison and James Gillis all summer. You know, the recruiting rules changed in April of 2017, such that for the class of 2021, there were six players who had committed before September 1st of their rising junior year, which is not a significant amount. Whereas in the class of 2020, Brennan O'Neill's class, there were 125 players who had committed. And so the difference is that before the rules changed versus after is the difference between whether we rank a class when the players had committed and it's impossible to ignore those commitments when you choose to rank the class, because we've typically always ranked the classes three times at roughly the same time of the year, that being when their junior year is about to start. So with the with the 21s, where we had Andrew McAdory ranked number one the first time we ranked the class, that was the first time that we did so without the influence of where the players were ranked. And I just, you know, while we have said all along that college coaches inform our opinions, there's a disconnect between what they know when they haven't interacted with the players interpersonally versus what they know afterward and how that influences their opinion. And so as a result, the data that we gather in August before the you know, September of their junior year is really isolated to how the players look on the field. It's an exercise that's much more similar to what you and I do, whereas the real job of recruiting is the combination of fit stylistically, it's academics, it's social, it's can I convince this athlete that he wants to come to my institution, right? Those are four additional prongs to just how good is he straight up and down that we don't really have to concern ourselves with. All of that is to say that, you know, McAdory started number one, he finished number two. In the class of 22, Joey Spallina was definitely a consensus number one recruit when the summer started. When the summer was done, we ranked him number one. He finished number one in the class. In the class of 23, same with McCabe Millen. He missed most of the summer due to injury. Class of 2024, Ryan Dunkel, same thing, missed most of the summer due to injury. Class of 2025, Brendan Millen. Last year was the first year in a very long time where at the beginning of the summer, there wasn't a clear consensus number one player in the class. And if you're a critic listening to this saying like, yeah, none of that stuff matters, I hear you with one exception, which is if you have an idea for the consensus best player in the class, that becomes the point of contrast for every player that gets watched and evaluated over the course of the entire summer. If that individual does not exist, then there's an imaginary player out there in the ether somewhere that is who every player gets contrasted against. And so as a result, like the avatar of the consensus number one player on June 1st serves a very important role. And last year, you know, I think on June 1st, I would have said, I think Lucas Garcia and Noah Hahn are probably the two most likely players that I'm familiar with that are going to end up in that conversation. And then I know that Dylan Faison has committed to play football and lacrosse at Notre Dame, but I am not that familiar with this game. So I'll watch and we'll see how he gets, you know, thrown into the mix. And then, you know, for me, I saw James Gillis on the first day that I was on the road over the summer and immediately reacted and like, this is one of the top players in the class. So when you contrast that to 2027, I think in general, the group is considered and has for a while been considered to be a better class. And I think that that is a function of the fact that it has more elite offensive players and more elite goalies. So while there are other positions, for instance, this group does not have an abundance of big defenders. It doesn't have a ton of standout two-way middies, at least that have kind of evidenced themselves yet. Those two position groups are so sought after and so important when it comes to building out a college lacrosse roster that if you feel like you have those in good numbers, then it de facto means you have a good class. So one of the other things is I think that this is a very well-known class, and that might be my personal bias. I've just watched them for longer than I did the 26s at this time last year. So as a result, I can say something like, you know, call it January 31st, before the high school season starts, after Sandstorm and the adrenaline event in January, and after last November, and after the summer prior, and after IDX, like, I would have said there were probably four goalies who were in contention for the best goalie in the class, and in this class, that puts them in contention for number one overall. You already mentioned Mo Sobel. I think the other three, you already mentioned Teddy O, he would have been one of them, and then Jet Steak from Lawrenceville and Bodie Harmon from Culver. I think those four guys were, at that time, in a tier of their own. I think there was a similar tier of offensive players that was also four guys. You already mentioned three of them, JT Cross, James Hobro, George Calderoni. I think Connor Morcell would have been included in that group as well. I think over the course of the season, the fifth offensive player that got added into the group is one that you already mentioned, Riley Woods. And that brings us to the start of this summer. Now, I think that like on June 1st to say that there were 9 guys who had a realistic shot, and maybe more, but there were at least 9 guys who you could have made a realistic argument about for being the number one player in the class. That is a ton of guys. And it's kind of a, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you don't have one scenario. I don't think much has changed over the intervening 3 weeks now since then to knock any of those guys down. And I think what's interesting is who's joined the conversation. You mentioned Trip King. I think he's a guy who had a really good spring, and now folks are really interested in seeing him this summer. JP Lagunowicz is somebody that I saw this weekend, and he immediately jumped off the page for me. There are a handful. Oh, yeah. See, I knew I was going to make that mistake. Nick, yeah. So the point is that it's a really good class with a really big top tier, and now we're just going to, you know, continue to wait and see how it develops. But what do you think about that? What does it do for the class when it's not that there wasn't, like, I want to say we weren't struggling to imagine who the number one player in the class was. We just had an abundance of options, and it was a struggle to figure out which one was likely to rise above and be the one that kind of became that consensus player. How do you feel like that has affected the way that the group has unfolded?
No, I totally agree. And I think that one way to illustrate it is kind of how I think about it, which is like when we look at and have these conversations, like who's the top kid on, we can't say every team in the country's board just because, like, you know, just to throw out 2 teams randomly, Delaware's board is going to be different than Duke's board, right? And so if we're looking at like the very elite, elite, elite of the very tippy top, right, it's, you know, maybe 20 schools, 25 schools. Of those 25, like who's going to be the number one player on the board? And of that, you could have a bunch of different arguments, right? Like some people could make it an argument that it's one of those goalies. You could argue that it's Brandon Fodder for the point that you made about the lack of two-way middies. He is as good on both sides of the ball as most of the country and can get it done everywhere in between as well. He's athletically gifted. And so for like his ability and his versatility, I think you could throw him in the mix as well and make that argument just based on the fact that like, he's probably one of the top midfielders in the class. Right. And so if you were to really kind of narrow it down on like team need combined with like who's going to be that top kid at each one of those like 25 teams boards, like I think that that's a really good way of looking at it because you're going to get a bunch of those different guys as that number one player on the top board. Like who are we prioritizing? Who are we having the head honcho show up on 9-1 at his doorstep, right? Like that can only be one person. And so that person, I think, is going to be really different for a lot of those teams.
So keep it going. Who were some of the other middies that stood out at Showtime?
Yeah, I think another midfielder, and again, I think this is one of the positions that kind of I got familiarized with some guys that I didn't know a ton about. One of which is, and again, I think that for me, one of the things that stands out is feeding midfielders, guys that you know are going to be able to kind of mesh early in an offense because they have the vision and IQ that it takes to kind of make that jump. And I think one of the things that's telling of that is like, you know, vision and IQ to understand, like, especially at the next level, crease jams and throwing it inside aren't going to get it done. But the guy that's seeing where they're filling from and skipping it through. And one of those guys to me is Marco Petrelli. And he, again, a lefty that just really did a really nice job of playing within the 6-on-6 frame of things in a showcase situation, in a showcase scenario where it can end up a lot of single dodge. But again, just did a really nice job of keeping offensive flow going and catching and surveying, but as a midfielder where he's, you know, shoulders down. And so now you're feeding attackmen that usually are A, closer to the goal, and B, better shooters. And so I thought that that was, one thing that really popped for me. And then Malcolm Child is a short stick defensive midfielder from St. Ignatius that, again, was really impressive. And I had great notes on him from the spring when they came out and played at Lawrenceville. And so as soon as I saw his name, like I started getting flashbacks to that as well. And then he did a really nice job from start to finish. And that's a position where you just get totally hung out to dry in those types of things because there's not a ton of you on each team and you're out there for so many possessions And of those possessions, the percentage of them that is like the coach on the sidelines, like, hey, swing it to this guy with a short stick and let him go, right? Like, is almost 100%. And so, if it's not swing it to him and let him go, it's like, oh, go pick for somebody else, right? And so now they're just
You're always in the
constantly being
action.
exposed, totally, or potentially exposed. And he did a really nice job from start to finish, and then can also handle it and did a nice job in the clear and all that type of stuff. So I was really impressed with him as well. And I know typically when we jump into this conversation, it's, offensive midfielder related, but I thought he deserved a shout out.
Nick Casella is going to be so upset that you said the name of a short stick D Mitty. Let's wrap up Showtime with the long poles and the face-off guys.
Again, another we mentioned Brandon, so let's talk John for a second. Did a really nice job, and I got there on Saturday morning, and I had a couple
John
of
Fodor, right?
people. Yes, sorry, thank you for clarifying.
Also,
But I got there on
Tuesday morning, right?
day two. I got there. I got there on day two. To start things off, it started at 8 a.m. I pulled up in like 8:05, so I was pissed at myself for that 5 minutes that I missed. But as soon as I sat down, I had a couple of guys tell me like, "Oh, my favorite defender on Friday night was John Fodor." So immediately, kind of was like, "All right, like I'll make sure I take some notes on that and like make sure I get a really good grasp of that throughout the day on Saturday." And I don't know that he got beat one time, so I thought that he was really impressive. Leif Anderson from Brunswick is one of the defenders that like just does everything really well. He's great on ball, great cover, great and clear, great hands, great on ground balls, and then like really pops for his off ball play. Like just is always in an athletic stance, always in a great posture, does a great job inside of communicating and like really reading the demeanor of the Dodger, if it's a go or a stay, those types of things. I think he does a really nice job of that. Sean Curry from Lawrenceville, massive, just absolutely huge. He's a really interesting prospect, A, because of his size and length and ability on the field, but B, because he's going to generate a ton of interest on the football field as well. And so he has some, just like life decisions to make here ahead of him in the next few months, but is certainly an interesting prospect that coaches right now are going to spend some time at least maybe potentially trying to convince to stick it out in the lacrosse field. And then one guy that I don't know that we've talked about, don't think he's been evaluated, but has done a nice job both at Showtime and early in the summer. I saw him at Platinum Cup and made some nice notes on him there. And that's Steele Malkin did a really nice job of just kind of like doing everything right. One of those guys, I mentioned that about Leaf, but like in Leaf does it in a more like eyes on me, demanding, demonstrative way. And Steele is a little more subtle, just kind of always in the right spots, but never gets beat and does a nice job off ball. And like I said, just a little more subtle, but will definitely be a high end, high caliber defensive commit.
Anything on the face-off, guys?
Yeah, that's a really good group as well. And I think in this, again, it's like they beat each other up so much over the course of it, but just to kind of highlight a couple of the guys that I really liked, I thought Justin Scalzo did a really nice job. Big, strong, athletic, has a great handle. And then Jackson Burke from Milton, a Thunder
Georgia
Blue guy
kid.
for his club. Yeah, Georgia kid. I thought he did a really nice job. And again, I had no real sense of his game before Showtime. And then he did a really nice job, won a ton to himself, won a ton forward, and was creating a ton of offense as well from the X. So was really impressed with him over the course of the week.
All right, let's shift gears. I will take the wheel and give you a little bit of rundown of my weekend. So I spent Saturday at Primetime, Sunday at Grade 8, flip-flopped with Dan Abrams. So he was at Primetime for their playoffs. But I'm going to start there and then move on to Grade 8. So Sweetlex Upstate won the championship, 8-6 victors over Primetime. Primetime beat 91 Machine 7-6 in one semifinal. Sweetlex beat Massachusetts 10-6 in the other semi. And then a couple other teams that didn't advance to the semis, but I got good notes on, and we'll drop in some comments over the course of this kind of breakdown are BBL and Leading Edge, both out of New Jersey. So start with Primetime. It's a very un-Primetime-like team. They're a group that has traditionally been associated with 6'5 defensemen, and that's not what this group is. Brody Roode is their standout pole. What they are is just very slick at the attack. Two Canadians, both from Lawrenceville. And again, that's just not what you would commonly associate with him. So Malcolm Richardson is the lefty. He's a really good runner. I thought that he was a very impressive dodger, good with the ball in his stick. And then the righty is Parker Doyle, who is taller and moves a little bit more uniquely. I would say that not as fluid of a runner, but a very effective player. And the thing that I liked the most out of him was the fearlessness of his shot. I think you can manifest that a couple different ways. So there were some instances in which maybe he should have been afraid. He was probably a yard or two farther out than was prudent. But the biggest thing is he was willing to shoot the ball through somebody's chest. And I thought that was a really effective weapon, both from the standpoint of deception as well as getting good looks. And he was accurate. He was able to pick corners. And I just came away really impressed by his game. But the showstopper, I guess, would be Colt Lumpris. His brother Ace was originally a Johns Hopkins lacrosse commit. He eventually switched to Air Force, where he is currently at the prep school and is going to play football and lacrosse for the Falcons. Ace is kind of the speed and fluidity guy. Colt is the power guy. I don't know his measurables offhand, but I want to say 6'5", 230. He's an outside linebacker, defensive end in football. Again, Lawrenceville, I think that's probably what explains the Lawrenceville primetime connection in this class. And, I mean, candidly, I didn't see him do a ton, but you could just tell, just an absolute monster on the lacrosse field and just somebody that you kind of have to get eyes on in order to come away with a good sense of who he actually is and what he's capable of. Continuing on, you know, I thought that the 91 machine group was a really interesting one to get eyes on. Luke Martini is, in my opinion, the kind of party starter, so to speak. He's a right-handed ex-attackman. He can, you know, beat a shorty. I think he's a quick decision maker. I came away really impressed by him. And then he's complimented on the right side by Nolan Weiserich from Massapequa, who is just super big, super tough. Puts his shoulder into guys as a dodger, gets to the middle of the field, and I came away very impressed by him. And then last 91 machine player I want to shout out is a long pole in Logan McCaffrey. You know, he struck me as the type of player who has the versatility to play up top or down low. He's a big righty. He moves really well, and I just came away super impressed by his game. And then, you know, I didn't feel like I came away with the best look of the Lacsachusetts team based on the quality of competition I saw them play against. But that being said, Matty Ramos is somebody who Matt Kinnear wrote about from the Lacrosse Masters Elite 80, the event that they did in conjunction with Harlem Lacrosse. And, you know, I thought his description was really enlightening and eye-opening, just about how smooth he is, how two-handed he is. I was really impressed by one sequence where he had kind of a textbook fake high, shoot low situation. So really, you know, he stood out to me for that Lacsachusetts team. And then Cole Hogenkamp it was the other attackman who I really came away impressed by. He's just a big, righty, thick, has good hands. He's a playmaker. So those were the two that I came away with decent notes on. Continuing on, you know, you mentioned Sean Curry, the big defenseman from Lawrenceville. I saw him play for Leading Edge, and I thought that it was a really good opportunity to get eyes on his line mate, Jagger. I don't know how to say his last name, but I'm gonna try Zamachson. He plays for Seton Hall Prep. And, you know, he's a really highly regarded player in this class. I thought that, you know, the thing that stood out to me about him was how wide he made himself by using his stick very effectively. It reminded me of Garrett Epple. I don't think he had the size or physicality of Epple, but I thought that he did a really nice job making himself difficult to get around. And that really stood out to me. And then the only other guy I want to shout out is a long pole from BBL, a Don Bosco guy, Justin Bosolina, who I thought, you know, just kind of had a velociraptor-like quality of stalking everything in the middle of the field. So those were the guys that I came away most impressed by. I've got probably about another 10 to 12 that I'm going to evaluate, and that'll be coming out here over the weekend or early next week on InsideTheCross.com.
So I'm going to pick up, and I have a couple segues. One, you mentioned Nolan Weiserich and Malcolm Richardson, both of those guys on my Showtime list as well, which means that almost all of the attacking that I had on my list to potentially mention have been. So I'm going to roll through them real quick right now because they also fall into the same category, which is like just super slick lefties. And so that's Jack Kelleher, Benjamin School, Sweetlax, Kellen Bladen, a WRA, and Evolve Elite. Both of those guys, just great hands, finish everything, great feeders. And then William Schwartz is a West Islip high school player that ran on the same line as Colsey and Holbro, which I thought was like, oh, well, you know, I could have scored a million goals out there like that too. But he did it in a much more impressive way. Another lefty that can really fill it up. And he can do it off the dodge. He can do it inside. Just really impressed with his game as well. And then the last one that I'll throw in that category, and he's a little more versatile, a little bit more can put on like the high wing or the high corners, and that's Nick Todd. And he plays a lot of midfield actually for his Annapolis Hawks team. And so maybe a little bit of a different category as those first three, but is another guy that I came away impressed with. And then I skipped out on my LSMs. I have two to shout out real quick. That's John Pike from Rumson Fairhaven. I thought he was awesome throughout the weekend. An all-star game standout as well. And then the other one that I'll throw out is the Brother Rice LSM that you, as a result of Instagram from a couple weeks ago, had a big play in the state championship game, but didn't really have much of a feel for him in person. And I mentioned that because you have to see him in person to get the sense for his game. Like, he is just a total moose. Like, everyone he touches gets moved. He's so strong, so physical, but also has an awesome stick. So there's definitely some defensive coordinators that fell in love with him over the course of that event.
All right, I'm going to move on to grade eight, and I would imagine that it's going to spark some similar types of comments from you. So, like I said, I was there on Sunday. I was able to be in attendance for the bracket play. Very familiar championship game to the Inside the Cross staff. Hilltop beats Next Level 7-4. That was the championship of our Fall Cup in November. So a lot of crossover there. In the semis, a pair of 5-4 victories. Next Level beat 3D Georgia 5-4, again, a team that we're very familiar with. And Hilltop beat Colorado Kings also by 5-4. And then keeping with the theme, this one in overtime, in extended overtime, the game, the quarterfinal that I was most focused on was 3D Georgia 5, Shorter Shore Grizzlies 4. And just want to shout out that there were two Garden City players for Shorter Shore who were not in attendance because they were playing, but hope to get eyes on them as the summer moves along. And it's Anthony Asaro, who I believe is a midfielder, and Andrew Dengler, a defender, both of whom I'm told are absolutely exceptional players. So, but just, you know, to kind of continue on with the observations, you know, my bias is toward, you know, players that either we haven't written up a ton or you know, haven't written up at all. And so, you know, I'm going to apologize for, you know, maybe not mentioning the likes of Danny Lopez, who I think definitely belongs in the conversation we were having earlier in terms of, you know, the tiers of guys to be in consideration for number one. He was actually playing a lot of midfield for this Hilltop team, which I found to be particularly interesting. You know, but he is certainly somebody that's proven his ability to play down low. And I think we're going to talk about him a little bit here as we close the podcast by talking about Loomis. But with respect to the Hilltop 27s, two guys that stood out to me, one an attackman from the Woodlands named Stockton Stewart. He was just... he had a really good step away drag feed to one of the only 28s that we're going to talk about, I think, on this podcast, who was playing up OJ Ika or Ika, who's a middie from Loomis, who made the catch and finish on the interior, coming there from Stewart. And then, you know, the other one is somebody who I got an opportunity to see when I went to Notre Dame, and they had those seven or eight high school teams come in for 3 days of games, and that's Justin Bishop, a middie out of MICDS, who very realistically might be the quickest midfield dodger in this class. His roll dodge is exceptional. His split dodge is exceptional. He is just so, so fast. And I think he's a really exciting player to watch. Kind of similar with next level in terms of, you know, familiarity put me in a position where I kind of was shaded toward, you know, two guys that I hadn't seen a ton of. One, Jonas Hawkins, an attackman from Landon. Another, Landon Bear, Sean Stice, or Stice, a middie. Stice was a tall lefty, moves really well. He kind of reminded me of Evan Zinn, if you remember that former Johns Hopkins Blue Jay and Virginia Cavalier. And then Hawkins was just kind of a good all-around player. He's a bit undersized, but just really knew how to make plays and make things happen. Continuing on, I mean, you know, again, when it comes to this Kings team, obviously a ton of really good players, but there's, you know, been pretty heavily exposed, whether it be JT Cross or Bodie Harmon. Five guys that stood out to me that I just want to shout out. Wyatt Branish, the lefty shooter, I thought that his chemistry was fantastic. Carter Robichaud is an explosive player who can attack closeouts or approaches really, really well. The Mills brothers, Zab and Zadie. Zab is the short 60 midi. Zadie is the close defenseman. Zadie Mills really stood out to me for his ability to play around GLE as well as in space. I thought he was really good. But then the player I came away from this game with most intrigued by was the faceoff specialist, Brandon Wright, who, talking with Ray Cross and Jeremy Noble after their loss, they told me that Wright is a starting cornerback on Valor's football team as a sophomore, which is really high-level football. And you could see that athleticism in his game in terms of his ability to both, when he came up with the ball, get to space without much effort, and that kind of manifested in not trying to do too much. And then in the instances in which he lost, he was an absolute dog trying to get the ball back. So I came away super impressed by him. And then just in terms of the last of the semifinalists that we haven't talked about yet, two guys for 3D Georgia that stood out again. You know, this is a group with the likes of Cole Parham and Lincoln Miller, who, you know, have gotten a ton of attention. But two that stood out to me, Connor Kuhn was the LSM. I love his athletic profile. He landed a great check, kind of a momentum-changing play at the midline, just plays really, really well in space. And then Cade Maracek, Tom Maracek's son, he just looked bigger, bigger than he had, than, you know, the last time I'd seen him. And I thought that that size really manifested in his game. I thought that he had an element of physicality that I hadn't seen previously. And then just to kind of wrap things up, so George Calderoni's team lost early. And so he actually played up in the 26 Stangs team. And I was, you know, just really excited to see him play again. It had been a minute since I'd seen him. You know, he draws comparisons to Michael Sowers. You know, I would say I don't know if this is a fair term to describe him, but it's just the one that always comes to mind when I watch him run. He's kind of a floppy runner, but it's an interesting, like, he makes it work for him. And obviously he had a viral clip from Showtime where he had a dunk coming from X that, you know, just showcased his athleticism, which was the combination of quickness, explosiveness, and jumping ability, both height and length, in order to be able to pull off that play. But the thing that stands out and is most about him is just how willing of a passer he is. I think he's probably the most willing passer out of this group of ex-attackmen. And on that basis, it's going to be really compelling to see where he decides to go, what type of offense he wants to play in. I was really excited to get my eyes on 3D New England again. Quincy Quillard, jumped out to me. From a Team 91 Charlotte Blue standpoint, Cooper Show is a really, really good player. And then a guy who I'm excited to write up because I can't believe he hasn't been evaluated on our on our recruiting database before is Jet Yaros, just an absolute load, a left-handed attackman from Wheaton Academy who plays for True Illinois. Just, you know, an awesome player. So really, really good weekend in Connecticut. And Dan, your thoughts and reactions to those guys.
Yeah, I'll pick up on the Calderoni case. I've seen him a bunch, I feel like, through a combination of best-in-class winner stuff with his IMG team, either on streams or in person at that victory event at the end of the spring. And then obviously just there at Showtime as well. And I think one of the things you mentioned is like feeding off the catch. If he's at X, a midfielder draws a slide, the ball goes to him. And now he's tasked with like reading it, making the best decision and throwing a really accurate feed. He is absolutely, I think, the best of the bunch of that we've seen so far. Like he does a really good job of that. And he can do it with either hand where he's like, he can throw a left-handed skip pass that, you know, a lot of kids at this age just aren't capable of doing. And then he has a creative flair. You mentioned like where he decides to go. Wherever that is, it's going to have to be somebody that's going to allow him some freedom. He's going to have to be allowed a little bit of a leash to make some type of plays that he does. And if we're going to do the comparison game, I think another person to throw in the mix is like maybe Connor Fields, because he's that type of like skill and create, like obviously right-handed, but like that type of like skill and creativity. And like he's not always that Michael Sowers like speed, right? Like, so it's maybe a mixture of Connor Fields and Michael Sowers, which I feel like a lot of people would sign up for. So yeah, I think the other thing that I'll add, and this is probably unfair to specifically say about him, because there's a lot of kids that you could throw this into this boat, but like the kid loves lacrosse. Like he is like, I believe that like he's going to figure it out just off of like, he'll grind until he does, you know, and like he's super skilled as a result of that love for the game. And I think that it's going to serve him well. Like that like love for the game is more important than like his lack of size and that type of thing.
Do you want to give us a rundown of your experience at Best in Class?
Yeah, and again, I'll start with the goalie group. Really impressive, and I think at this group, and one of the things that everybody is tasked with doing, you know, coaches just get to kind of roll it in, and it's all like one big sample. But from our perspective, when it comes to like highlighting event standouts or like picking event all-stars, it's this balance of like, we know this player, we know he's good, versus like this person really produced extremely well over the course of this specific event. And so from that perspective, like there's a ton of goalies you could throw in the mix, but I think the one that really, really made a name based on that sample was Jackson Gillis, Haverford School, and just did an awesome job of, you know, like just made a million saves in a showcase setting where you see a ton of rubber. And a lot of times it's some pretty high quality opportunities. And so he made a million saves throughout it. Again, to kind of hit the tier kind of idea, I thought Jackson and Teddy O were one and two for me. And then right just below them, maybe a 3A and 3B would be Will Russo from Loyola LA, who's another one of the guys that kind of fits the mold of like a bigger goalie, but does a lot less of the like sprawling and like high action and high energy movements. It's just kind of big, fills up the cage, keeps it simple, reads the ball, sees the ball, saves the ball. And then again, to kind of hit the opposite end of that spectrum, smaller, quicker, was Cody Philpott. And again, he did a really nice job of just making a ton of saves throughout it. A guy that made things hard from like, you know, if we were to really just kind of narrow things down and it was to be an all-star, they didn't do that at this event. They do a lot of times. But if you were to have to narrow it to four, it would have been those four. But two guys that would have made that decision really hard was Holt Farver from St. Albans. And I thought that he was like, he got better as the event went on just as a result of like some confidence. And I thought it just kind of spiraled. And next thing you know, like he was playing at, you know, a level that I thought that he thought that was, you know, just like confidence building and really impressive. And then the last of that bunch would be Nick Nieven at Calvert Hall, who is a guy that has some pretty heavy rain name recognition at this point, but did a nice job at that event as well.
All right, man, keep it rolling.
All right. Two guys I also shouted these guys out on Twitter, Colin Ogden and Harrison Jacobson. Harrison, been evaluated a couple times. I think he's one of the better, just like step down time and room shooters of the midfielders that I've seen so far this season. Super consistent with it. Anytime he gets hands free, it ends up in the back of the net. And he did that a ton over the course of that 2 days, sample. And then Colin Ogden, very opposite sample, very opposite skill set, super versatile. Not the most eye-popping athlete, not going to do a ton of like dynamic dodging, but super, super versatile, awesome in the clear, fills roles in 6-on-6, great between the lines, and then talks like crazy. Like, I think that that's like at this, you're battling a couple things at this stage when it comes to talking like that, like the IQ to do it, the confidence to communicate it. And like in an individual setting where a lot of times the kids are competing for cool and it's not always cool to yell at your teammate like, hey, get in the hole. But it's effective and it leads to winning. And I thought Colin Ogden did a ton of that type of stuff. There's just like winning plays that coaches want to see in the summer. And so from that perspective, like those two guys really popped, Torrey Pines, West Coast Stars midfielders. After day one, if you had asked me to name an offensive MVP, it would have been Henry Oakey. And then on day two, he started it with 5 goals in the first game. So it was validated come that time. Really impressed with his game. And he's a guy that's been in the spotlight for a little while, just based off of like the first time I saw him was probably two, maybe three, two, at least 2 years ago at this point at NHSLS with Taft, where he was playing some big time ball as a young kid. And again, just really impressive, high skilled, can catch and shoot and kill you off of that, or can attack an approach and hit you on the run. Really impressive scorer. Another guy that played a really, a ton of minutes this year, at some high caliber ball was Rex Adamson for Georgetown Prep. Next level attackman. He's been evaluated. He's actually a hometown from Wisconsin. So somewhat interesting from that perspective as well, but really skilled and a mesh player, a guy that can fit on the perimeter and do a ton of dodging, but also can go inside and cut and fade and work, that like right corner where you're working to the pipe, working to the wing, cutting everywhere in between. And I thought that he did a really nice job of that. Trip King, we mentioned already, he was great at best in class as well. Same as Kellen Bladen, we mentioned him earlier. He had a really nice event. And then a defender that I thought was really impressive that I didn't know before was Austin Leonard from Santa Margarita, a Mad Dog defender. Super physical, big, strong, great around the cage, but also has the footwork to kind of defend in space as well. So was really impressed with him as well.
Whew.
Yeah, that's all
That was a
fresh.
dense 45 minutes.
That's all fresh. That best in class stuff is all fresh just because, I'm working on that right now and hope to have that live by the time you're listening to this. So if it isn't already live as you're listening to this, buckle up, it's coming soon.
Right, Dan, before we get out of here, I mentioned at the top, the high school season has, at this point, for all but two or three locales, come to a close. We just had an incredibly epic set of public high school state championships in New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut. But what that means is we're getting close to the final Q Collar National High School Rankings. Would you like to let the folks know who is going to be the 2025 national champion?
Yeah, it's an honor representing and making that announcement that Loomis Chafee will take the number one spot, the 2025 National Champions of the High School World.
It's an incredible story with respect to how fast and how far this program has come. My college roommate went to Loomis, and you know, they were a good program, but he played there. He didn't play in college. You know what I mean? Like, it's not to say that every player that has come through there has played in college, but the point is that the job that Bill Ball has done in building the program is really remarkable. And you know, certainly Rowan Nury, a 2025 who's in the mix for the USA U20 team, who's heading to Cornell, and you know, might have designs on being the next CJ Kirst or Jeff Teat, was certainly the talisman. But you know more about this team than I do. So who were some of the principals that allowed them to have such a good year, and what do you attribute this kind of meteoric rise to prominence to?
Yeah, I mean, first thing, you mentioned Bill Ball, and he's done a fantastic job there of getting these guys organized and getting a ton of talent in, right? Like, this team is loaded from top to start. And when you look at the attack line, you mentioned Rowan Nury. They also have Anthony and Jaden Rodriguez, who played a little bit of, you know, together. But Anthony obviously getting the bulk of the time and then had some injuries. And Jaden was able to just kind of fill in and be, you know, really impactful as well. And then Milky Conway Reppert owns that lefty spot over there. And I think that, like I said, that's just a group that meshes really well. And you mentioned Nury as kind of the tip of the spear, and we've talked about him a few times over the course of the season and podcast and all those sorts of things, but he's just a total stud, right? Like, he's a guy that we expect to be able to step in at Cornell next year and really make an impact pretty early, and that's a super high bar. And so I think for him, what's most special is just like his composure and demeanor and like IQ on top of his ability to, you know, go by guys and win matchups. Right. And so it's just this like overall mesh of all of those things for him that I think is really impressive. And I actually was having a conversation about Rowan specifically this week in his game. And one thing I think is interesting is, like, I think early in his career, he got really talented and skilled around the cage of using some deception to his step and using his stick and using the back of the cage to generate a step. And then over the course of the last few years, he's just gotten more athletic, that now it's allowed him the ability to like drop his shoulder and attack with speed on top of all of the things that he got used to being able to do. It's like, if you got used to winning matchups without being as athletic, and then you got a little bit of an injection of athleticism to be able to use to your advantage as well, it's just going to guide you farther and help you win some of those matchups against some of those top tier defenders that are, you know, really physically impressive. And so I think for him, that evolution was really impressive. And then in the midfield, just some absolute snipers, some guys that can hit you from range. Cole Goodwillie, another guy that you mentioned, just kind of coming in late in his career, but got there and, you know, provide some range and athleticism. And David Disk as well, a guy that was really impressive and kind of boomed throughout the season.
Dan, an incredible breakdown, a incredible podcast. Really appreciate your time. Know how difficult it is to carve it out this time of year. So with that said, don't know when we're going to be back with the next Isle Press podcast, but when I know that when we do, we're going to have another dense edition with a lot of guys that we're going to talk about. So any parting thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I don't think anything super specific. Just make sure you're tuned in on social media. We're going to be rolling through a ton of these recaps, pumping out evaluations, you know, and all that type of stuff. Tons of recruiting content still to come.
Thank you for listening to the Inside Lacrosse podcast. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and a review. Tell a friend. And while I don't know when we'll be back with the next Preps podcast, I do know that there will be more Isle podcasts next week. So check back for more from this channel. Thanks, everybody.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.